Good vibe astrology.
I'm so glad we're all here today for our third call on astrology for deliberate creators. How are you today, Kim?
Excellent. Yes, so glad to be here finally after 5 minutes of, you don't want to know.
Well, I'm glad for the topic that we're covering today. For some reason, I've been covering this with in my one-on-one client sessions a lot lately. So I'm really excited that we get to focus on it tonight. Do you want to introduce our topic today, or should we cover homework from last week before we dive in?
Yeah, well, yes, all of the above. First, I wanted to thank everyone who posted on the forum some of their homework. That's really helpful for even those who aren't posting and just reading. They get an idea of how to follow these threads and explored self-love and the body scan, and there's some really amazing stuff coming up, particularly just the recent post on Moon in Capricorn I thought was relevant, because I think there's about three in the group that have Moon in Capricorn. There's more than one. So that was really special. Thank you, everyone, for that. And if you have, it's not too late. Just because we've gone on to the next week doesn't mean you can't go back and post homework or ask questions for that week's topic. Also, I started a post called, a thread called Rookie Q&A. If you want to think of a better name for it, that's cool. But it reminded me, because Jeanette uses the word rookie, she said, oh, that was a rookie move, and I just love that.
Especially when we use it with love. This is not a term for us to be embarrassed about. It is a complete term of love and endearment. And I myself, in fact, some of the things that you guys have posted makes me think, whoa, I'm such a rookie at all this. And so, yeah, no judgment around that term. And thank you for starting that thread, Kim. I think it really helped us be able to ask the questions we might not otherwise.
Yeah, just
as you know,
there.
I certainly appreciated it. And I have, just for the record, I did go on and I printed out a bunch of, you know, the 12 astrological houses and core values exploration and the planets. And, yeah, I'm working through all that stuff. You know, it's a lot of new stuff for me to learn to be able to utilize this new information you're sharing. So,
right on.
Appreciate that.
Good to hear.
So you're welcome. And there's at least half of the people in the group are in the same boat. It is new information, and we are just learning it. So we're just going to take our time. And any of those really basic questions that you think, oh, this is too basic, that's where we put them, in the rookie Q&A, and it is rookie with a big fat love heart on it, if they had that ability on the subject, I would. So, do go there. And so today, let's just jump in, and let's keep all our questions for the end of the call. If you have anything urgent or confusing, pop it into the chat, but let's try to hold questions to the end. Today we're going to talk about tolerations and
what's helpful about releasing them.
Yes, and you know, I was thinking while I was kind of getting geared up for this call this morning, my phone wasn't getting geared up, but I was, and I was thinking, these are invisible. These are things that we, just by the nature of what they are, we don't see them, we don't think about them. They run kind of under our radar. And they are just like little energy eater Pac-Men going through our vibe and chewing up our flow. Mm. And so identifying them and tuning in, not so much focusing on the negativity of them, but identifying, putting awareness there, and releasing it's such a powerful tool. And the thing, we'll go into detail about this, but the big thing is, that there is no toleration in the world that can't be turned around on a dime, either by letting it go, resolving it, not having that in your life anymore, or finding a different way to think about it. So as we go through this, just remember, find, catch, and release.
Ooh, I like that.
And the big key, of course, we're going to tool that we're going to focus on today is how to use the astrological signs to identify and help us find where our tolerations are. So that's the goal for today.
Mm-hmm.
And we can jump right in. Jeanette, do you want to introduce this concept?
Yeah, I will. I love what you said, Kim, about how they can be invisible. I mean, sometimes we have tolerations that we're very clear about, you know, like, oh, we hate going to our job, or we're in a dead-end relationship, or it really bothers us, you know, that we still live in the basement apartment or whatever. I mean, some of them we are conscious about, but the ones that really, when they go unchecked, the ones that we're conscious of, we can work on, we can manage. But it's the ones we don't know about that go unchecked that can keep our vibration in a place that prevents us from experiencing the kind of alignment where we're manifesting effortless magic and miracles in our life. So in fact, Jack Canfield has said before, when he was introducing the concept of deliberate creation and the power of energy management to new audiences, there was one guy who was really excited about it, and he said, okay, I'm on board, I get it, where do I start? And Jack said, we start with dropping irritations. He calls them irritations rather than tolerations. I in coach training, they call it tolerations. You might heard them called energy drainers or a variety of other terms, but we're really just talking about what's draining our energy, what's keeping us from high vibrational alignment. And Jack had gone on to say that sometimes if this is all that you do, this in itself can fix a lot of things that have been blocking your progress if you just address tolerations by releasing them. I'm talking about not just identifying them, although sometimes just becoming aware does help things move in and of itself, but very often the powerful step is going to be eliminating them, getting them handled in some form or fashion, whether that's by taking some action or finding a way to feel differently about it or engaging an energy process that allows things to shift. That's really what we're going to be talking about here today, and I'm really excited to look at how our astrology can support that process. So just so that we're all on board with what a toleration is, it's anything that is bothering you, anything that's draining your energy, anything that makes you feel less than fabulous, and it can be little things such as, oh, I've got a phone call, I've got a return, or I've got an email that I got to track down and respond to. It could be little things that just weigh on you a little bit like that, or it could be things like something going wrong physically in our body that feels really unwanted or undesirable, or something going really south in a relationship, committing ourselves daily to work that we don't love. That can be a huge toleration. So they can show up in all areas of life, and I think that's worth remembering, that they can be financial, they can be physical, they can be environmental, they can be relational, they can be spiritual. If we're lacking something in our lives along those lines, or if we're not engaging work that we love, they can show up across the board. So we want to be aware of them, because without that awareness, we're really powerless to address them. And once we start addressing them, once we start eliminating them, magic can happen. Even if we don't do anything else in our life, we just start handling the things that have been bothering us, that recaptured energy can shoot us up to the kind of alignment that allows all the things that universe has had queued up but we weren't letting in because we weren't in vibrational range of it, they can start flooding in effortlessly without any work on our part, simply because we started addressing tolerations. So this is actually some of the work I like to start off with clients, because magic things can happen, and plus you automatically feel better. And everyone knows this, because we've all experienced that thing where, you know, you organize a closet or clean out a drawer and you feel better. Like, it just feels really good, you know, when you do a little thing like that. That's because we've recaptured that lost energy, and that is good for our alignment. Kim, what do you want to add to that?
I just, when you said cleaning out a closet, it just popped into my mind. I wanted to say that releasing tolerations is like doing a whole feng shui check on your life, a whole declutter of your life. It's getting things correct, inner and outer. And I think the concept of feng shui is based on releasing energy tolerations, because having things cluttered up or that tolerating energy is like closed fist, clamped down tight, and it takes energy to hold that. That's why we feel this release and abundance
mm-hmm.
and flow when
right.
we resolve.
Because that's our natural
yeah.
state. That's where we
yeah.
live. I mean, that's we don't have to work to get up there. We just have to drop the stuff that's keeping us from being there, and that's where we naturally rise. I love, Kim, though, that you mentioned inner and outer, because sometimes our tolerations are thought patterns or like something emotional that's happening internally, and that can be our energy drain. So it's I'm glad that you brought that up, because we want to be aware of those as well.
Mm, very much so. They can be part of the hidden ones. Self-talk, we can tolerate self-talk as if it was someone in our life kind of putting us down in a in an area of, oh, that wasn't good enough, or you'll never get that
mm-hmm.
right, or, you know, and it's under the radar. It can very much be under the radar. So, yeah, bringing that to light is a very powerful transformational tool.
Coaches talk about living in a toleration-free zone where, oh, my gosh, and they have this horrendous process of identifying them where it's like, oh, I don't know, a huge checklist, like 100 things or something from various
oh,
areas of life.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
clean,
my
sweet.
God.
Yeah, like
clean,
you make your bed every
daunting.
Day. Is your hair the way you want it to be? Are your nails
your
in good
made.
Shape? Like, yeah, it's a ton of, and I don't use it because, look, what the toleration to me may not be to someone else, so I don't think you can actually have a checklist like that. But I understand the process of doing a scan through all areas of life. I used to have coaches who would ask me to make a list of 100 tolerations and not stop until I had 100 things down that were bothering me in life, so that I then had a template to go through and knock them out one by one, which sounds good in theory. But by the time I was like two-thirds through my list, literally I was in number 67 of writing down things that bothered me about my life, and I was so discouraged I could not continue. And I was like, this is the worst exercise ever. And the next coach who tried to get me to do it, I was like, I'm not falling for that again. That's a horrible process. And that coach said, okay, well, instead of a list of 100, just write down 3 or 4 that come to mind, knock those out. Once they're gone, you know, notice the next 3 or 4 and knock those out and just continue the process until eventually you are living toleration-free. And I'll tell you what is fun to do this with a partner. Like if you have a buddy in doing this, it's way, way, way more fun to report in progress. Have some of that involves, it's a benefit of having an accountability partner as well. But if anyone wanted to do that, oh my gosh, count me in for that party in the threads, in the forums.
Oh, me too. Me too. It is very powerful to do that. But Jeanette, you bring up this really good point of, this comes up for me all the time. What's the dividing line between putting awareness on something and feeding it? In terms of, okay, I want to become aware of my tolerations, listing 1 through 100. I'm sure I couldn't think of 100 things wrong.
You'd be surprised.
Okay.
Once we get whatever we focus on, so you start looking for
yeah.
what you don't like, you'll come up with
yeah.
them, and it's not fun.
No,
don't do that.
I know. I don't like the way that sounds. That's not how we're going to approach
no,
this.
No, the value
today.
There is awareness. Because like you said,
yes.
Kim, when the things are invisible, we're powerless to change them. So awareness is our key, but we don't want to just focus on it and then marinate in it. You know, it's like the purpose of identifying it is to shift it. So it isn't something that we have to live under forever, but, you know, you get a couple in mind. I like that process, actually worked really well for me, especially I personally love starting with the small ones. Like, okay, there's a throw up stain on the carpet that I got to handle, or I got to say yes or no to someone who invited me to that party. I like handling the little ones because then as I recapture that lost energy, it gives me more power for dealing with the bigger things that I haven't addressed because I don't know how to. Like, I hate my job and I don't know how to quit it. Or I'm in a marriage that I really need to get out of but I can't afford to. Or, you know, the things that we might be aware of but we have no clue how to go about. So I personally like to start with the small ones, but there are others who are like, shoot. They call them pivotal tolerations, the ones that are the source of like 7 other things that bother you. And, you know, they just go for the gold. I personally like to start small.
Yes, I agree. Starting small also gives you confidence when you know you
mm-hmm.
start to use these tools to transform a small toleration. It sets up a pattern, a template for transforming the larger ones. Because as we know, nothing's really large or small. It's all just energy that we can change. And it's our perception of what's way big and being seen.
Agreed.
Yes. Yeah, good point. Okay. That's
should we talk about how to handle tolerations, or should we talk about
I think we'll talk about what I'd like to do is how we're going to show how we're going to use our charts to identify tolerations without marinating in them, but just to explore them. It's going to be fun. And then we'll talk about, okay, now we got this idea of what the toleration is, how do we let go? And I just want to point out that Janet on the chat mentioned a great way for identifying tolerations to ask, what would I change if I won, $100 million? I didn't even know how to read that much money. There's a toleration. $100 million. So that's a fun thought for how, that's a good one to explore. And that comes up really in our second house of money. So we'll go into that. So if everyone, should we just jump into the astrological exercise?
Let's do.
We can all run through this. If everyone has their chart in front of them, so anyone listening to the call later, get your chart out, and everyone here today, be looking at your chart. I just realized.
Are we looking at natals or with
transits?
We're
looking at our natal chart. This is all about the birth chart right now. We're not thinking about transits so much at all at this point. And what we're doing is we are going to look specifically at the sign that rules the house, each individual house. So we know we have 12 houses, 12 pieces of pie. And on the top of the house, the door into the house, this is going counterclockwise, 1 through 12, there will be a sign on that house. In your notes for today's lecture, I've been doing uni for today's talk is a style of chart printout style that makes it very, very, very obvious where that sign is. It's called the teardrop style. And if you've looked at your notes yet, you'll see very clearly where the sign ruling the house sits. And that's in there just to give you a guideline for those who are just starting out looking at charts. But everyone, as we talk today about this technique, you're going to be looking only, for now, at the sign that rules that house. So it's the sign on the cusp. If anyone is confused by how to find this or where this is for them, don't worry, don't panic. You're going to either shoot me an email or pop it up in the Rookie Forum and we'll sort it out for you. We've got tutorials, and you've got me and Jeanette to help point out to you in your chart where the sign on the house cusp is. Okay, so you're looking at your chart, and we are going to run through each of the 12 signs and where they sit in the chart. So for you, you're just going to be spotting where these signs are and which houses they're ruling. And some of you are going to find that you have the same sign ruling two houses. Or you may have a sign that doesn't rule a cusp at all. It's sandwiched in between. And we'll go into detail about that as well. But for now, we're going to start with Aries, and we're going to go right round to Pisces. And you're going to look on your in your chart where what house that rules. It's going to be different probably for most of us, unless we have the same ascendance. Okay, so we're ready to go?
Let me just make sure we've got this right, Kim. So we're going to start with Aries, meaning I look in my chart for the house cusp that Aries is on. So
I think for you it's the third house.
The third house, right, okay.
Yeah, for me it's the ninth.
Okay.
Janet, I'm just thinking top of my head, who's got what? Janet, I know your Aries is intercepted in the 12th, so we're going to go on to that. But you're just going to spot where that sign is and what house it rules. We're going to talk very briefly, just keywords, about what that sign wants, what it needs, what it desires. This is your authentic expression through that sign. And it's expressing in the area of life described by the house. So, for example, wherever your Aries is where you need to be the boss. It's where you need to lead and adventure and be independent. It's there's push there, and let's take action. Your
is that? And, oh my gosh! Yes. Sorry. Look at me. I'm doing it right now. Aries. I've got Aries on
yes,
three.
Interrupt.
That's the house
Go
of
ahead.
Communication, right? Like
yeah.
I will interrupt because that's my
yes.
Aries.
No, you can take over.
I was thinking about how I just muted our call for some background noise. Like, that's my Aries in action, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
On the third house.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, third house.
Kim?
Communication. You're okay, who's got the dashboard on this talk?
Yeah, no
you,
kidding.
You, and you
right.
will always have the dashboard.
I will always have. I do not like calls when I do not have the dashboard. Sometimes I do calls with Lisa where she's in charge and it drives me nuts.
Well, this is why.
This is
and
why.
It's not, and
so,
this is authentic. And so right now you have described how to find a toleration, not
oh,
having the dashboard.
Where I'm not in charge.
And
yeah,
it shows
where I'm not in charge, where I don't get to be the
yes.
boss.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
Kim, for someone who's looking at their chart and they're like, what is Aries? Like if I'm looking at astro.com, the wheel, I know, I just would love for you to remind people where they can go to find the Aries, the glyphs. Remember how we have...
Okay. In your yes, and in the notes, all you have to do is click a link. And in at Good Vibe Astrology, we have a like 3-minute tutorial that shows you exactly what the glyphs are and what they look like. Actually, I could have we could post. That would have been a good thing to do. Include in the notes just a quick legend of the glyphs. But the – now I've lost my notes. Mercury, come back to me. Here it is. you have no idea how many screens are open here. That can't be right. There's a link there that's at Good Vibe Astrology. Also, there's a link to the 12 houses because we're going to look at the meaning of the house. And if you click, actually, I'll just find, is there anyone in the chat that's having, not sure what, how to read the glyphs?
There's no questions in chat, but let me unmute Julie and Nicole.
Make sure that they, because I'm right now, while you do that, I'm just going to go to groundwork and pull up what they need to be looking at.
Julie and Nicole, do either of you have questions about what the glyphs are? Like, do you know where your Aries is?
I know. My Aries is on the ascendant, so
okay.
I know where my Aries is.
And Nicole,
I know
you're
most
good?
Of the glyphs now.
Yes.
Okay.
There's a couple I'm still not sure about, but
yes, I have Aries on the 8th.
Oh, Aries on. Oh, good.
That's right.
Now we know where everyone's Aries is. I love the conversation even more where we know who it applies to.
Okay. All right, I've just got, I'm just popping this in the chat in case I can't find the chat. Jeanette, this is so funny here. You should see my dashboard.
It's only
okay.
Me and you and Janet in chat anyway. Julie
oh, right. Well, that was not really necessary then. But there's a link anyway. But it is necessary because after the call, I'm going to go back, grab this link, and put it in the notes so
okay,
I can
cool.
repost the notes a little more complete. So it'll be helpful for those of you that are listening to the call. All right.
Thanks, Kim.
Let's run through this now. We've all got our starting point. This is your
mm-hmm.
personal starting point. Wherever Aries is in the chart, that's where you jump into manifestation. Okay, so super important. And you know that if you're not being the boss in that house, whatever that house represents, that's a huge toleration.
A potential.
Okay,
potential.
Yeah, it's a huge, if you're not
mm-hmm.
being who you are in any of these aspects of life, you're putting up with something. You're handling something, and maybe you're going to find a way, like, we'll just use this as an example before we run through the signs. But, Jeanette, let's say once a week, Lisa does have the control panel. Well, once a week, that can you can grind your teeth through the call.
Or hang up, as I've been known to do.
Yeah, okay. Or you can find a way, what would be an Aries way to be cool with her having the call? It might be people serve me. They look after after things for me so I can have a holiday. This is my holiday call. Where I get to just,
kind of like I delegated. I could imagine I'm the boss and I delegated responsibility to the managing of the call to someone else. What Kim's talking about right here is finding a different way to think about it in order to feel like we're more in alignment with our true nature in this area of our chart.
Exactly. You don't think Lisa has control. You think Lisa works for me. she's my she's not on this call. I love Lisa. You think she's doing what I'm telling her to do. You've got to feel like you're the boss of her, and she's taking this command so that you can sip your tea through the call and eat a bicky and put your feet up. You've got to think of it that way. If you're thinking of it like she has control, I don't, it's going to suck and it's going to be tolerated.
You're right. You know, this is one reason why when I do one-on-one sessions, I tell clients, I will call you so I'm not sitting around waiting for someone to initiate communication. And if someone is like even 30 seconds slow, I'm not exaggerating, I will shoot them an email, say, here's my number, just so you have it handy. Like, I don't wait 10 minutes like some coaches will. And the only time I ever do that, I only do that for Masters of Creation on call-in days. Every other time, though, I initiate the communication. I think that's a really important thing you point out, though, that sometimes we can get around this and find our sweet spot with it simply by changing our perception of it.
Yes. Absolutely. That's the key. And once we change our perception of it, we're no longer tolerating because we are still living out exactly who we are, and it's all just by changing how we think about it. But you can't fake that. You can't do a fake it's okay. It has to actually really be okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that may take some practice to get there. And if we fail at it, then we take some action in order to change it.
Well, exactly. If it's just not, if you can't find a good way to think about it, then you have to tell people, I will have the dash. And that's just it. And that's just how you approach calls, regardless. No one has the dash but you.
This is super hilarious because for Good Vibe Coach Academy, Lisa maintains the mailing list, which would be ruled in the third house, right, Kim?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Okay. Yes. I've driven her crazy with emails like, I don't think it's working. I tried this and I never got anything. And our sign up doesn't seem to be working. Like, I drove her crazy enough that she finally just said, do you want to be in charge? I said, absolutely.
Oh, my God. Okay. I'm going to just remember that. Because so far you've been really good to me about the little things I get to do. Okay, that's very cool. All right, so hopefully everybody's getting an idea of how we are going to use our charts, our personal astrology, to give us insights into the what we're tolerating and how we can transform it. So, Taurus, let's just run around the signs.
Right on.
And again, you're going to be going counterclockwise around your chart. Taurus, which is the circle with the he's the bull, the circle with the horns on top. This is where we do need to be relaxed and find some sense of peace. We need to bring something down to earth, make it tangible. If you've got Taurus on the 10th house cusp, you better have some tangible results to your career, mission, profession. You want to see the numbers. You want to see some practical results. Often you want to see money. And believe me, not everyone has that primary need in their when it comes to career. It may seem obvious, but it's not always like that. If someone had Taurus on the third house cusp of communication, they'd be a lot more laid back. You wouldn't probably put them in charge of the list because they'd be too slack to keep it up to date. They might just be a little too relaxed about it. But there are areas of life where that relaxed, calm, peaceful, graceful energy is utterly ideal. So think about where Taurus is and what house it's in and anything that you are or are not living out in that area. Okay, where Gemini is, we need to talk. If you've got Gemini on that 10th house cusp, boy, your career better involve a lot of phone time and a lot of communication, a lot of back and forth. If it's in your 7th house of relationship, holy cow. If you're with someone who's not into pillow talk and chatting and analyzing and discussing, it's just you're going to be tolerating a lot because your partner isn't coming to your Gemini party. So think about Gemini in terms of learning, teaching, discussing ideas, exploring knowledge. Knowledge is power. Where Cancer is, it's a whole new story. This is where we get very soft and very protective. It's not soft in a disempowered way. It's very potent in its surround and protect energy. And this is where we need to share emotions. Don't need the words. Someone with Cancer on the 7th house cusp doesn't care about the talking in relationship, but wants to feel the communion, the sharing of emotional pleasure and pain. Like, it's not real until I hear about your pain. Can you show it to me? And this is a very vulnerable state. Let's, you know, explore these vulnerable symbiotic states. Also, where Cancer is, we need to feel like we're needed. If you've got Cancer on something like the 11th house cusp and you're involved in a group and you don't feel like you've got a job, a role, or something where people need you, can turn to you, it's not going to feel right. It's not going to feel right. So this is where we need to be someone to ask us for help so that we can respond. The need is to be able to respond to someone else's need. Okay, where Leo is, we need to be the rock star. We need to be on stage. I don't care how, you know, if you got all your planets in Virgo and just want to be the power behind the stage, if wherever Leo is, you step up. That's where you want to step up. You want to shine. You want to be appreciated for your creativity and your humor and your fun and your, you know, all those performance arts kind of energy. Hey, you, watch me. It's going to be in that area of life. I have Leo on the 12th, well, the first house cusp as well, but the 12th house cusp, which is very interesting because the 12th house is where we disappear. And you get a fire sign ruling the 12th house and something like Leo that says, hey, you watch me. In the area of life where you vanish, you got to find a way to connect with the collective and be on stage for the collective in a way where you're not seen, but you are. And I'm a novelist. So I create all these characters and scenes and worlds and stories that people, the collective, engage in, and most of them have no idea who I am. You know, how many of you know the people who write the books you love? You don't know the person, but there's this expression, this creative expression.
That is cool.
Yeah, I know. And I'll tell you what, for all those years where I didn't have that connection, my life felt utterly like this just whole chunk. It was a hole in my heart. It was a hole in my heart because I was, and that was a huge toleration. And like in, you know, when they do guidance counseling in high school, no one's looking at your chart saying, wow, you know, this is something you, if you express, your whole world's going to light up. No one's doing that. They're often not getting those insights. What I'm saying is we don't really get the guidance my computer just did something weird. We don't get the guidance that is the most supportive. Okay, Virgo. Where Virgo is, go nuts with the organization. This is where we are able to just explore and expand all our potential. Get into the core of our aptitude and work those skills down to the minute detail. And we want to refine things and go ahead and analyze things. If you've got Virgo ruling the seventh house, part of you is going to thrive by analyzing relationships, by, you know, sometimes we think, oh, don't think about it so much. Well, not if you've got Virgo there, think about it. Spend some time analyzing, getting down to the details, really understanding, comparing and contrasting. That's what's natural. If you've got Virgo in the seventh house and you're with a partner who doesn't like to talk any of your, you know, business or relationship, and they don't like to nut things out and really understand the motivations and the core of what's happening and all that, it's going to feel a little like things are missing, like you're putting up with not having that energy flow. A lot of people with Virgo involved in the seventh house are counselors of some kind, or in their job they have this across the table analysis kind of thing, not necessarily psychological, but you get that energy going there because it fulfills this need. Okay, where Libra is, no matter, I don't care if you have every planet in Aries and you're just as independent as ever, where Libra is, this is where you want to share. Life is shared there. Life is shared there. If you have Libra ruling your third house cusp, then you want to share your ideas. You want to collaborate with the written, through the written and spoken word. If it's on the 10th house cusp, you may be a business owner, but you want a partner. You want to share that career energy. This is not for the isolated researcher. So, yes, the primary thing about Libra is share and really be able to appreciate the good, true, and beautiful. There is this objectivity to Libra that wants to, it's not just like share the not share the nitty-gritty, it's share the beauty, share the elegance.
You know, just as a personal example, you know, one of my big tolerations in life, anyone who knows me knows I hate to travel, and one of the ways that I mitigate that, first of all, I travel very little, like maybe twice a year, and when I have to, if I can get someone to go with me, that makes all the difference in the world. I wonder if that's because I got Libra on 9. Because if I
absolutely
can share it with someone, it's a whole different
absolutely
experience.
Yeah, you're not a person who gets off on traveling alone. And as a matter of fact, traveling alone would just suck because
I hate it.
You're, yeah.
The last time I did it, I swore I'm not doing it again.
Yes. You find someone you really like and share the experience with them, and that will get you towards fun. And that has to do with every ninth house experience, not just travel. Mm-hmm. It might be spiritual exploration. It might be philosophy. Mm-hmm. This is not something
learning.
You don't go off and sit in a cave for 5 years and read every philosopher, you know, since the beginning. You share across the table. You discuss it over good food and wine and you or beer, and you make a relationship of it. Same with higher education. You would have done, well, I don't know what your university experience was like at all, actually, I realized, but I think the joy in that, if you had a study partner.
This is hilarious.
Yeah?
Guess what I did?
I don't know.
My boyfriend and I, and he took every class with me. We basically took all the same classes because I was an excellent student and he was a horrible one. So he basically sailed through, you know, with me helping him out, but I liked it so much because we were doing it together, even though really it was just me doing it, but he was there. It was so funny.
Yes. You had the double whammy of pleasure because you were doing it together and you got to be the communication boss.
I was the leader of it. How hilarious. Oh, my God.
Yes. Yeah.
Hilarious.
Good one. Yeah, that's a great insight. Okay, where Scorpio is in your chart, this is the area of life where you like to make things really intense. You like things to be a matter of life or death. I was posting something this morning on the boot camp thread, boot camp group, and I can't even remember what the statement was. what was the statement? It triggered this whole thing for me. Statement was something like, who cares? Was it
oh,
cares?
So what? Yeah. So what?
Yes,
or big deal? This sacred mantra.
So what? What's the big deal? And I I went on about that. But the thing is, where Scorpio is in your chart, it feels right and authentic and true to make it a big deal. You want to feel like it's a life or death situation. And I know that sounds crazy, and it doesn't even sound like, well, that can't be very LOA. But in that area of life, that's what's authentic. And there's something about the power of intensity and being intensely engaged with something that is very nourishing if we do it in the area of life where we have Scorpio ruling. What's happening with my voice? I'm sorry. If we try to say so what in our Scorpio house, we're kidding ourselves.
Mm.
Other areas of life, absolutely, and it can be a wonderful release and help our bring relief and bring a better perspective, a more open and flowing perspective. But where Scorpio is, and also where Pluto is, we'll go into how the planets affect this. But Scorpio says make it intense. And it's like pretend it is a big deal there. It may feel counterintuitive LOA-wise, but try it in your Scorpio area of life. And you'll find that that is something that nurtures you on a deep soul level, because there's something very empowering about anything having that much weight and that much meaning in that area of life. So if you have a lot of people with Scorpio on the 10th house cups, for example, which is... Well, we're using you a lot.
I had that experience today. I was addressing a group of coaches that I don't usually get to talk to. My colleague runs a course. She invited me to lead a call, and I literally approached that call as if this were a life-changing call for them, like not just, oh, let's have some fun together, but like this might be their only exposure that they get to my brand of deliberate creation. I treated it was intense and it was focused, and you could tell from the comments from them that they experienced it that way.
No, that's awesome. That's absolutely awesome. And you'll find how people with Scorpio up there with career, they will choose careers that deal with very intense human experience. Like they might be doctors in emergency ward, or they might be rescue workers. They might be politicians, because they're dealing with collective intense emotions. But obviously, counselors and coaches who often work very closely with people's that significant point of their lives, like they come to you for counseling or coaching because they what's to them is feels like a life or death situation, or sometimes it can be very raw and very very intense. So yes, absolutely makes sense. Can you imagine if someone had Scorpio ruling the seventh house and they want this kind of, you know, I've got you, you know, you've got me, eye contact, smoldering, whether it's sexy or arguing, in the seventh house, but their partner had Taurus there. Taurus who wants peace at any price, and Scorpio who wants, you know, transformation no matter what has to burn. but these are authentic needs, and this is where we can really understand. Maybe that if the Taurian person there in that relationship with the Scorpio is engaging in that intensity, they're tolerating, because their dream come true is something much, much more relaxed, much more sensual, in that epithemia, that totally accepting, natural, we don't have to analyze this. This doesn't have to become, you know, tantric, mind transforming. This is just feels good. Let's just have something here that feels good. They'd be tolerating. Or if the Scorpio person has learned to contain their needs for intensity, whether it's really positive or whether it's creating arguments, because fights can be intense and this really powerful exchange, wonderful for the Scorpio inclined experience. If they're dialing that back, they're tolerating too. So understanding what our needs are is going to really open up our lives in terms of how we can live more authentically. Okay, Sagittarius, where Sagittarius is, we need to be free. We need to expand and explore and experience new horizons. We're going to feel trapped if we're not able to feel like the back door's open. So this gets very interesting if Sag is ruling the seventh house cusp, for example, where we traditionally make powerful commitments, very exclusive commitments, which are not natural to Sagittarius. That doesn't mean you can't get married or have a business partnership if you've got Sag there, but you need to put some awareness on what that means to you and whether you're going to be tolerating that that commitment or whether you can find a way to get on board with it or create a commitment that does feel like freedom. It sounds strange, but that's the goal there. Where Capricorn is, we want to build empires. Okay, we want to purpose and repurpose and make real and climb to the heights. It's not going to be good enough to just let it go with the flow where Capricorn is because we want to put hands on, build something tangible, see it, look at the accomplishment of it. There's a lot of ambition there, and that's authentic. If you've got someone who comes to me for an astrology reading and they've got Capricorn rolling the 10th house of career, and they say to me, I'm not interested in, I don't have any ambition, I believe the chart, not them. And I start to explore where that road turned left because they got all the ambition in the world. And if they're not owning it, then that's a huge toleration. Okay, where Aquarius is where we need to dare to be different. This is jump outside the box and let really eccentric ideas come into play. We also need a lot of space. In your Aquarius house, you don't want to feel too hemmed in by anything too needy or just almost like it's not opposite of Cancer, but it is opposite of Cancer in the way that where Cancer is, we want to feel needed. Where Aquarius is, we want to kind of disseminate without kind of touching the fringes. We don't want anyone to, like, grasping our hem or pulling on our sleeves asking for much. But we do want to be able to explore these outside-the-box realms. And finally, where Pisces is in the chart, this is where we want to merge with the divine. We want to just fall into this sense of oneness with all life. And this is why Pisces is associated with spirituality and also with addiction, because there are a lot of ways to seek this oneness. And those thirsting and longing for this connection can often find it or find a semblance of it through drug addiction or alcohol addiction or any kind of addiction, because it feels like at first it can fill this hole. It's almost like a place where we need to feel that connection with life, and if it's not there, then we start to try to fix it and fill it, and of course addiction just feeds on itself. So you get Pisces and Neptune can be associated with these kinds of downward spiraling addictions or this transcendent feeling of connection with all life, and it's the same drive. It is the same drive. It's just different expressions. So if where we have Pisces on the seventh house, if we aren't having absolute faith in the unknown future, going with the flow and dissolving into a feeling of oneness that is beautiful and creative and fulfilling, then it starts to feel like, what the heck? There's a big toleration there. If we're people with Pisces, for example, on the 10th house cusp of career, just as a reference, they often don't know what they want to do for a very long time. You don't worry if they're like in their 30s or even 40s and go, well, I've done this and that and I'm still not sure, and that's fine. It's a very exploratory, go with the flow, expand out, doesn't have to nail down to one thing. It's almost nebulous in the feeling of where Pisces is. We do have this nebulous connection with life. But once we get to that belief that we are all one, Pisces just blooms. And wherever it is in your chart just becomes this magical manifestation vortex center. Okay. So those are the signs and just some key words about what they need. And as you go through your chart, you're going to look at those signs and then look at the houses. Where did we put that list of houses in
the
notes?
Yeah, it's in the notes.
Good.
Yes.
Good us. You're going to look at the basic area of life and measure. I would like you all for your homework to go around and look at the sign on the house cusp, the house it's in, and give yourself a score between 0 and 10, if this feels right to do, between 0 and 10 of how well, how authentic your life reflects that need. How much are you living that out? And that's just a way to get in touch with where you might be tolerating. Then you're going to take maybe your two or three lowest scores in that exercise, and that's where we're going to apply how to transform the tolerations. Jeanette, do you want to give us a few words on how some of the ideas of once we identify a toleration, what can we do about it?
Well, I think it's important for us to start out with, no matter what we're dealing with, that we not be discouraged about it, but that we rather approach it from an empowered place and a place of possibilities rather than shut down like, oh, well, that's something I have no control over, I have no power over, there's nothing I can change about that. That perspective doesn't usually support us very well in transforming these tolerations. You had mentioned, though, earlier that this, I want to put a spotlight on it, that it, whether it's something that we handle actively, like what it's, we get it done, we throw it out, we outsource it, put someone else in charge of it, or somehow, some way we manage it in a really active, action-oriented basis. That's one way to approach it. The other is change how we feel about it. I had an example of a client I was working with who his biggest toleration at work was one of his employees who had been there for quite a while, but his morale was horrid and it was affecting everyone else. Like everyone had a hard time enjoying the workday with this guy around. So he had concluded what he needed to do to manage this was to fire the guy. His homework was, between now and the next time we spoke, to let the guy go. When we got on the phone the next week, he said, you know, the more I thought about it, the more, and what it meant, because the guy had been there forever and he knew things that no one else knew, and he had other reasons that he didn't really want to let the guy go, so he just decided to make peace with it. I just decided to be okay with it. I mean, he said something to the guy about how, you know, it'd be great if, you know, you could be a little more conscientious about the energy you're bringing to the office, but he didn't require him to change in order to feel better, because he realized this feels better to just let it be, you know, kind of so what it. I think that's important for us to realize that's always, even if nothing else seems like there's any other way we can manage this, we can always choose to change how we feel about it. That is within our power.
Good point. That's excellent. I've got a little example about how I changed the toleration that you would have thought was just written in stone, that there was no way this could ever be changed. I've told this story before, so some of you might know it. So I'll keep it short. But I live in a place that didn't allow pets. Can you imagine being in a place that didn't allow pets? But anyway, I did. Of course, I had pets because, you know, I'm alive. But I have cats, and they were not allowed outside. Or when they could go outside, it had to be, like, sneaky. And it was a huge toleration for me. It was huge. I felt terrible about it. I felt guilty for my cats. I felt angry that there could be this rule, and every emotion that could chop up into my vibe and my energy was there, I promise. And Jeanette, I know we talked about, this was years ago, we talked about tolerations, and it hadn't occurred to me to see it a different way. And the way I saw it was, my cats can go outside whenever they want. And it was crazy because they couldn't. They absolutely couldn't. But my way of dealing with it, and I did that spell. Remember, ask on the forum about this, and I'll share it. But there's this little spell. It's a drawing that you do on a piece of paper. And, of course, anything with the word spell on it excites me. And I did a spell that Jeanette told me about, and I drew it. I drew the problem. I drew over it this really big, beautiful, stick figure. The artist Jean skipped me, but these beautiful cat stick figures, and they're outside, and they're rolling in the garden, and they're running under the sun, and all this. Anyway, after something like, there was this rule had been in place for 30 years. Nobody could have pets. If you had pets, it was a secret. Blah, blah, blah. Within 3 weeks of me every day waking up, looking at the sunshine and saying, oh, this is wonderful. I can take the cats and I can go sit on the sunny deck and I can have my coffee. And I just freaking pretended the hell out of this and made it real the way I wanted it. And within 3 weeks, that rule was gone. It was gone. You know, I swell up when I tell this story because this is one of the biggest things in my life. I know it sounds small. I mean, who cares? It's cat inside, outside. They live longer if they don't go outside, apparently. But it was their pleasure in life. I had just projected so much of my own pleasure in life related to my cat. Mm. Anyway, for years now, I don't know, that was 5 years ago or something, or longer, they are in and out, and the manager comes by and will scratch the one behind the ear, and also happy to see you guys out in the sun today. It's just like
that's
what
cool.
I created happened, and this was one way to deal with the toleration. So, yes, you can get on board with it and make it so it doesn't hurt you anymore. It doesn't seem it. You find a way to get okay with it. Or you can just take it by the balls and say, this is my new reality. And, oh, boy, that was a very powerful exercise.
I love that you shared that on the recording. Thanks.
Yes, we've got in your notes, we've got some ideas on how to work with tolerations, and we want to work with them, isn't the right way, release.
Mm-hmm.
And change the way we feel about tolerations, because toleration really is just it's tied into a thought, the way we think about something. So changing that thought first, whether it's changing how much that really means to us or changing whether that thought is real or not, like cats are allowed outside. Pets are allowed. They have dogs here. Oh, my God, they have pets all over the place now, years later. I've changed the whole, collective world.
Everyone could thank Kim for it.
Yeah. I don't know if they know, but anyway, I have. So let's talk on the forum. We've got on the this week's forum, we can talk about any of the tolerations that we've discovered through exploring our astrology and some ways that we might want to release that toleration. We can share those ideas there.
I think that's actually an excellent point, that sometimes someone who isn't suffering under the same energy can give us some really powerful insights to how to shift it. So having some friends in this work is really powerful. So big thumbs up on sharing in the forums about this. Kim, I have lost
my... Can I just ask one question about it before... I'm just curious, a lot of mine do not line up, like, clearly with the houses. And you said the one on the cusp. Now, I have Aries rising, and so it's then in my first house. It rules my first house. But then
yeah.
I also have Taurus in my first house, which is my sun sign. And it seems like I'm just curious as to... And also in my relationship house, I have both Libra, which seems, kind of calm, and then I have Scorpio. So those energies that are sharing a house, how does How does that impact them?
How does that work? Yeah, good question. Thank you for that question. What we're doing with this exercise is looking at the ruler of the house, and that's going to be the sign on the cusp, regardless of however many other signs are in that house. And for the most part, you will have more, at least one other sign in that house, unless it's a duplicated house. But for this exercise, we're looking at the ruler because the ruler is the primary need, okay, the primary energy, the dominant
of that
house.
So which one, obviously... How do you tell where the cusp is for where these...
Okay, the cusp, if you're looking... Again, what we'll do is I'll explain this further in the on the forum thread. Maybe I'll write something in there straight up. And what I could do is do your chart with that teardrop printout so you can see it very specifically where the signs sit. But each house is a piece of pie, right? You're looking at a pizza with 12 pieces of pie. The first house, we know there's the horizon line that splits that circle right in half. And the first house cusp is right on the edge of that line of the first house. Now you're going to go counterclockwise to the edge of the next house, the second house. We're going to go 30 degrees down. There's another line, and there'll be a sign on there. If you're looking at your astro.com chart, all you have to do is read in the legend the ruler of each house. That will be found under, there'll be a list, it'll say sun, such and such a sign, etc., those all the planets. Then underneath the planets, you will see six little squares, and in each square it'll say ascendant, Aries, and the degree. Then it'll say second house, and it'll give you the second house sign. And it'll give you the first, it'll give you half the houses because the other half, meaning the opposite sign, so if you've got Aries on the first house, you can't have nothing but Libra on the seventh. You will have the opposite sign. So anyone not clear on what those opposite signs are, I'm going to post some very clear references in the forums after we hang up.
Okay.
So it's written out for you. The other clue, for those listening to the call, when you make a chart on astro.com, you have an option of looking at further detail, PDF details. It's up in the upper left-hand corner. There's a link that you click if you're a subscriber. Don't worry about that. But it'll say something like extra data or more data. It comes up in a PDF. Click that, and you will have all 12 houses listed out with the degrees and the sign ruling them. I'll do a screenshot of that and pop that on the forum for everybody to find. Good points. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I think that also answers a question Janet had asked in chat room earlier. I lost my chat room, so I can't actually read
I've
it again.
I've got it.
Well, I was wondering if Nicole, do you have any questions before we wrap up? We're a little bit over time, but if you had one, I didn't want to hang up. Yep.
No, I just am so, like, it was such a good call just to hear, you know, I mean, I know, I would consider myself, you know, a student of astrology, but just to hear the houses explained in that way with the law of attraction and just, like, you know, exactly, it's like you're, you know, in a bad mood and it's just like, how is this? You know, what house does this fall into? Why am I in a bad mood? Like, and then using that toleration to turn it around, that's just such a great gift. You know what I'm saying? It was awesome.
Right on.
Thank you. Yeah. No, Janet, I'm looking at what you're... Hang on. No, I'm in there. You're not the only one. So you're asking about the intercepted signs in the houses. And this is a bit like Julie's question about what happens when we have more than one sign. And this can happen. But for today's exercise, we're just looking at the rulers because they have a significant dominance. So you would be looking at Pisces ruling your 12th house. once you get into your 12th house, you will find there's another room in there. There's another, like a closet within a, this is the TARDIS effect. There's another room where you open up, and that is where your Aries is. But that's a, what we want to know right now is just the sign that is ruling the house. So we keep it very straightforward. Jeanette, I think you've got like three signs in your first and seventh.
Yep.
Yeah. So it know right away, the more signs that you have in a house, the more complex the energy of that house is. And that's a good thing. It makes it very, very interesting. It means when you go there, when you do the thing of that house, there's you're a very complex creature. But you get there. You start there with what's on the house cuff. So that's where we're starting today. That's where we're looking for tolerations. What I would like, Janet in particular, is to pop a question on the forum about intercepted signs so I can address that a bit and point to, we've got a lot of material about that at GVA. I've written a lot about intercepted signs, so we can delve into that more. It's a very valid question. Thank you.
And if anyone's listening to the recording and has questions, post those in the forum as well. And is there anything else we needed to say on this recording, Kim?
I think we're good. If anyone wants extra credit, I've got a little bit of extra credit in your notes, but if you want extra, extra credit, don't be shy. I can keep you busy.
Right on. Well, insightful as always, Kim. I had that same feeling again today that I did on our last call where I interrupted to just to say how much I love you, but I was really proud of myself for not doing it.
Thank you. I had to, oh, my God, I had to listen to that to let it in. I had to go back and listen to it because, yeah, I was just, thank you. That lights me up.
Well, this is a fun way to play together. Thanks, Julie and Nicole, for dialing in, and Janet for joining us in chat room. And everyone who's posting in the forums, I just think this is a fabulous way for us to play. So thanks again, everyone, for joining us. And we'll keep each other apprised in the forums.
Yeah. Sounds wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Love you.
Bye, everyone.